This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here with Dr. Lucy Green from the Mallard Space Science Laboratory. Welcome back to the Jodcast.
Oh, it's lovely to be back.
So could you tell us a little bit about what you've been working on? I think we last talked to you in 2007.
That's right. So probably at that point in time, well, definitely actually, I was working on coronal mass ejections. So since then, I've been looking at observations of the source regions of coronal mass ejections on the sun. So these are the eruptions of magnetic field from the sun's atmosphere. And I've been trying to work out how much magnetic field are in these eruptions so that we can work out why they erupt.
So magnetic fields are something that we talk about a lot, but most of the time in astronomy, they're not actually very well understood, but in the sun, we can understand them quite well.
We can, yeah. So we can make measurements of the magnetic field at the sun's surface, which is the key to the advances that have been made. And in particular, we can make maps of the magnetic field in sunspot regions. So that's where most of the magnetic field, which is actually ultimately coming from inside the sun, in the sunspots is where this interior magnetic field has risen up and rises and bursts through the surface, forming big structures in the sun's atmosphere, which ultimately evolve and then erupt as a coronal mass ejection.
So when people look at the sun, they see sunspots, we see coronal mass ejections and also solar flares. What's the difference between all these?
Yeah, so they're all intimately tied together, and it is hard to disentangle them, but the sunspots themselves are the dark features on the sun's surface, and they're regions of concentrated magnetic field. And because they're regions of concentrated magnetic field, the gases there don't have the heat replenished very readily, and it cools down, which hence the sunspots appear dark. And then solar flares and coronal mass ejections will happen in these sunspot regions. Solar flares are kind of like explosions in the sun's atmosphere where the gases get heated very rapidly to very high temperatures, and they start to shine very brightly in X-rays, ultraviolet, radio wavelengths. So solar flares are releases of energy low down in the sun's atmosphere. A coronal mass ejection is an eruption of magnetic field and hot gas into the solar system. So to me, I sort of conceptualize a solar flare as an explosion in the atmosphere, but a coronal mass ejection is actually a bulk eruption of magnetic field and particles.
And then so these coronal mass ejections are what then form the aurora on Earth?
Yeah, it's definitely related. So the coronal mass ejections can travel out from the sun in any direction, and of course sometimes they will collide with the Earth. When they get to us, you can have an interaction with the magnetic field of the coronal mass ejection and the magnetic field of the Earth. And the Earth's magnetic field can become kind of energized, and a series of currents get set up. And it's these currents, we think, that then accelerate particles which are trapped in the Earth's magnetic field. And so they get accelerated from high heights down towards and into the Earth's upper atmosphere. And that's where they give up their energy and produce the northern light. So, ultimately the energy comes from the sun, but it's processes that happen in the Earth's magnetosphere, in the Earth's magnetic field, that produce the northern lights.
And so there's been quite a lot of activity on the sun recently, and on Twitter and things you can find out when coronal mass ejections have gone off. What kind of timescales are we talking about between a coronal mass ejection going off and the potential to see the northern lights?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So coronal mass ejections can travel with different speeds. So the slowest ones might go maybe a few hundred kilometres a second. Still sounds very fast. The fastest ones up to around 2,000 kilometres a second, which means they can take from, say, 18 hours to 4 days to get to us. So it is pretty hard to predict when they're going to arrive, but we do forecast these. And so you look at the observations from the sun, try and work out what their velocity is, what direction they're going in, and then you can put that into a model and predict the arrival time. And it's pretty good. So last night we had a coronal mass ejection that left the sun on Friday, today's Sunday, and it was predicted to hit at midnight last night, plus or minus 7 hours, and I think it arrived about 5:30 this morning.
Can we talk a bit about the instruments that you use to study the sun? Are they mostly space satellites these days?
Yeah, the instruments I use are all in space. And that's because it gives us, on the one hand, an uninterrupted view of the sun away from the effects of the Earth's atmosphere, but also it allows us to reach parts of the electromagnetic spectrum that you can't get on the Earth. So, for example, the ultraviolet light, X-ray radiation coming from the sun. So I use a fleet of spacecraft, actually. Yeah, I feel, you know, that there's a lot of technology available to us, and in particular I'm using the Solar Dynamics Observatory, which is NASA's latest mission to study the sun, and a Japanese mission called Hinode, which we have a telescope on board, a spectrometer on board. And between those two missions in particular, we can see the sun's surface, the sun's atmosphere, we can take images of it. But importantly, with our telescope on Hinode, we can split the light coming from the sun into the wavelength and do spectroscopy, so we can look at what the composition of the gases is, how fast the gases are moving and how dense they are, things like that.
And so what kind of elements do you see?
Oh, a range of elements. So the most abundant being hydrogen and helium, but then in particular iron is very important to us, because the iron ions give off light at a range of wavelengths, and they emit very well in the sun's atmosphere. So iron is important to us.
And these spacecraft, are they close to Earth or are they close to the sun?
These two in particular are in orbit around the Earth. So it's actually very important for the Solar Dynamics Observatory, because the spacecraft takes so much data, it takes so many detailed images, that it needs to be in constant contact with the ground station to relay its data. So yeah, SDO, the Solar Dynamics Observatory, has a nice orbit where it can constantly send down the data to us. But there are other spacecraft in other orbits, and in particular what's exciting now is that we have the STEREO spacecraft, another NASA mission, and they are in orbit around the sun, and they've moved apart over time, and they give us now actually a view of the far side of the sun. So from the Earth we see the sun with Hinode and Solar Dynamics Observatory, but yeah, STEREO are in orbit around the sun, and for the first time in humanity we can see all of the sun's atmosphere now.
Does the sun emit at all wavelengths, or are there any wavelengths that it's quiet at?
The sun is amazing at emitting across all wavelengths. So, yeah, ultimately you need to get all the parts of the spectrum together to study the sun. So, so in radio, invisible, in ultraviolet, X-rays, and even gamma ray emission as well, during events like the solar flares that we talked about.
Well, we're running out of battery, so we should probably end the interview there. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
It's a pleasure.